Stay tuned for Nightline Africa, coming up right after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Tommy McNeil reporting. A vehicle drove into a group of people in the western German city of Munster Saturday, killing several of them and probably the driver. Mass-selling Daily Bild reported it online edition that three people had died in the incident. It showed pictures of where police had cordoned off an area in the city. The incident evoked memories of a December 2016 truck attack in Berlin that killed 12 people. Accusations that Russia's behind elections meddling around the globe and attacks on individuals prompted the White House to impose sanctions against Russian individuals and companies.
The sanctions will be imposed on 7 Russian oligarchs and 12 companies they own or control, 17 senior Russian government officials, as well as a state-owned Russian weapons trading company will also be targeted. U.S. officials say the sanctions are not in response to any single event or issue, but are aimed at countering the totality of the Russian government's, quote, ongoing and increasingly brazen pattern of malign activity around the world. Doug Bernard, VOA News.
The Trump administration says the United States is not engaged in a trade war with China, even as President Trump threatens an additional $100 billion in tariffs in Chinese goods. In retaliation, China has unveiled a list of U.S. products that would be subject to its higher tariffs. Those include soybeans, vehicles, and chemical products. Soybean farmer John Kiefner does not like the president's approach to this.
If he can't help farmers, maybe he should quit doing things that are hurting us.
White House Press Secretary Sarah Huckabee Sanders says the U.S. and China are in routine contact, but this is a negotiation period, and that's why tariffs have not yet been imposed while things are worked out with Beijing. This is VOA News. Syrian troops have launched a ground and air assault on the last rebel-held town in eastern Ghouta, killing at least 40 people. The violence comes after nearly 2 weeks of calm in Ghouta, an enclave on the eastern edge of Damascus. In February, Syria's government and its ally Russia launched an air and ground offensive on eastern Ghouta, killing more than 1,600 civilians. U.S. Attorney General Jeff Sessions announced a zero-tolerance policy on illegal border crossings into the United States, the latest initiative of the so-called Trump era of immigration enforcement. As relations between Beijing and Pyongyang thaw slightly, the prospect of China relaxing its sanctions imposed on North Korea and thwarting U.S. President Donald Trump's maximum pressure campaign makes some experts wary. In an attempt to renew relations with China, North Korean leader Kim Jong-un made an unexpected visit to Beijing to meet with Chinese President Xi Jinping last week. Experts on the North Korean economy speculate that Kim may have asked Xi to ease sanctions during his visit and that if Xi, in fact, agreed, the move could complicate the U.S. effort to exert pressure on North Korea ahead of a nuclear summit tentatively set to take place with Trump next month. Muslim American advocacy organizations are hailing a legal settlement with New York City police over the department's surveillance of the community, saying the agreement sends a message that simply being Muslim is not a crime. Under the terms of the settlement, the police confirmed that they have dismantled the unit responsible for carrying out the intelligence gathering. Palestinian medical workers say Israeli forces killed 7 Palestinian protesters Friday as thousands of demonstrators gathered along the Israeli-Gaza border. Gaza's health ministry said the dead include a 16-year-old and also reported that 408 Palestinians were injured in the violence. The deaths bring the number of Palestinians killed by Israeli fire since last week to at least 27. At least 14 people were killed late Friday when a semi-trailer collided with a bus carrying a Canadian junior hockey team. A total of 28 people, including coaches and the driver, were on the bus. The prime minister said that he could not imagine what the parents of the players were going through. April 7th marks the 70th anniversary of the World Health Organization, also marks World Health Day. Over the past 70 years, the World Health Organization has spearheaded efforts to free the world of killer diseases like smallpox. It's since formed partnerships in other diseases like polio. Peter Crowley, a former polio team leader at UNICEF, said we're nearing the end of it.
We're almost there, this close. 99.9% of polio has been eradicated from the world.
He made that statement in 2014, and since then, workers have kept up their efforts despite conflict and hardship. I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you live from the English service of The Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clotty in Washington.
What President Marabio said right from the beginning is that he's going to provide disciplined leadership for Sierra Leone.
Sierra Leone swears in newly elected President Julius Maada Bio.
I can tell you what I know as a member of the CPDM party. The CPDM party has continually encouraged and supported the President of the Republic in his capacity as the national president of the party.
The Cameroonian ruling party wins a majority in the senatorial elections.
We're almost there, this close. 99.9% of polio has been eradicated from the world.
And today marks the 70th anniversary of the World Health Organization. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. The newly elected Sierra Leonean President Brigadier Julius Maada Bio has called on his opponent to drop the legal challenge of the result of the presidential runoff vote. Former Foreign Minister Samora Wilson Kamara from the All People's Congress, or APC, rejected the outcome of the poll, citing alleged voter irregularities and rigging. This after the National Electoral Commission declared Maada Bio winner of the runoff vote after he garnered 51.81% of the vote, while Kamara got 48.19%. Meanwhile, President Maada Bio has established a transitional team to ensure a smooth transfer of power from the previous administration. For more, I reached Dr. Ali Kaba, a leading member of the transitional team.
Consistent with his vision to build an inclusive government, President Maada Bio immediately started working from day one. So a couple of days ago, we worked on setting up this transition committee, and he was gracious enough to appoint people with proven competencies. And we started work right away, and we hope to continue that work the next few days, and hopefully have a report for him very soon. What we did in the interim was to engage key sectors. He has had high-level meetings with senior civil servants to, first of all, assure them that he's here to make sure government delivers. What he promised was to establish the efficient and effective management of all affairs of the state and the economy in a way that will, number one, make people trust government, and number two, lift people out of poverty. Everything we have done is centered around that particular framework. And so we are working hard to make sure that we give him what he expects from us.
The president has called for a unity government. He is willing, he said, to work with his opponent, Samora Kamara. How serious is his commitment to this? And are Sierra Leoneans going to see a true unity government that will represent the nation as he promised?
Well, those who know President Maada Bio for years know that he's a man of his word. He doesn't say anything he does not believe in. His commitment to inclusive governance is part of the cornerstone of the campaign. It's part of the centerpiece of our manifesto. In effect, it's part of his promise to the people of Sierra Leone. So whatever we are doing right now is an affirmation of that deep belief that he has. Government must work for everyone, that every corner of this country must feel connected to government. And that means that he's going to search for talent. He's going to search for people who have that commitment to deliver services effectively with the central goal that we are going to make life better for our people. And so Sierra Leoneans should expect to see a government that is going to reflect who we are as a one country, one people, Sierra Leone, and that he's open to meeting anyone. His doors are open, and he's reached out to everyone. You see people from even the outgoing government of the APC reaching out. They know that he's a decent man who has a proven record.
There has been isolated cases of post-election violence. What are his views about it? Some people are saying he should come out forcefully to warn people to ensure the protection of life and property and that the laws are enforced.
Well, he has come out already. What President Marabio said right from the beginning is that he's going to provide disciplined leadership for Sierra Leone, because that is what it's going to take for us to move forward as a country. So he has talked to the party, he's talked to the country at large, and he's engaged the security apparatus. He's made it very clear that we have to move forward united and at peace with ourselves, that no one should take the law into their own hands, that, yes, campaigns are always tough. You have to do what it takes to win, and we won. But we are beyond that now. Even when we are celebrating, we have to celebrate responsibly. We have to make sure that our neighbors know that even if they voted for the other party, that they are Sierra Leoneans first, that we have to come together as one people, that this is a victory for all of us. That is his message, a victory for all of us. That is the disciplined leadership that President Julius Maada Bio is going to provide for this country, and I hope that it is going to take this country in the new direction that we enshrine in the context of our People's Manifesto.
Now, let me ask you about the swearing in. Why being sworn in at a hotel instead of the usual practice of being sworn in at a government institution, or for that matter, the State House? What changed?
Well, nothing changed. You can do this anywhere, you know. What the president is really affirming is that he's ready to work. He did not want to delay. The story here is that he did not wait for days. Every day matters. We know the monumental challenges we are facing today as a country. And he promised our people during the campaign. By the way, we campaigned everywhere in this country, from Cotbury to Cotbury, village to village, leaving no chiefdom out, leaving no district out, leaving no region out. And his message every day was, I'll hit the road running. And that is what he is doing. He did not want to sleep again hours, wake up in the morning and waste another day. He woke up the next day ready to work. And those of us around him did just that. We went to work. And that is what we're going to continue to do, working for the people, working to make sure that this country becomes a better place. We shouldn't be the third hungriest country on the face of the earth. We shouldn't be poor. We have the resources. And he keeps on reminding us that we must not and we should not fail our people. That is why we are so excited and passionate working in this government to deliver on the promise that we clearly define in our manifesto.
Dr. Ali Kaba is a leading member of the Sierra Leonean Transitional Team. He spoke with me from the capital, Freetown. This week, the Cameroonian Ruling People's Democratic Movement, or CPDM, won the majority of the senatorial elections held on March 25th. The election's outcome, declared by the chairman of the Constitutional Council, Clement Antagana, saw the ruling party winning in 9 of the 10 regions, taking 63 seats in the Senate. The main opposition Social Democratic Front, or SDF, won 7 seats after winning in the Northwest region. Meanwhile, President Paul Biya is expected to appoint the remaining 30 senators, to complete the 100-man Senate. For reaction, I reached Dr. Elvis Ngolengole, the coordinator of the academia for the Cameroonian ruling party, CPDM.
The victory of the CPDM, even though it's quite overwhelming, which was expected and which is a result of hard work, we think that this victory is a victory for democracy, for the entire republic, and it's a victory for the freedom-loving people, and we hope that together in freedom, we can build and strengthen our democracy and go beyond elections. We have to learn to go beyond elections and know that the most important thing is to make sure that democracy is strong and that our nation is united in peace.
Critics are saying the election result should be cancelled because it's not a true representative of the issues on the ground, and that problems still exist in the English-speaking areas. Elections were not held in certain areas, so it has to be rerun after the problems in the English-speaking areas are resolved. How do you react to that?
Now, those who say that the elections should be redone or that the elections did not take place because of problems here and there, I think they're either out of bad faith or they really are not Democrats. You know, you cannot have a democracy without those who have a democratic mindset. True, true. They are right that there are problems here and there. But I don't know of any democracy, as you very well know, where there are no problems here and there. The fact that there are problems here and there does not absolve us of the responsibility to continue in our freedom to build democracy. Look, there were problems in Nigeria, but they had presidential elections. There are problems everywhere, but problems do not stop the march towards a more perfect union. The fact that there were those problems did not stop Cameroonian electors, in this case, the councillors, in their freedom from voting, and they did vote, in spite of all the attempts to intimidate them from voting. I think all those who do not want people to exercise the freedom to vote are not Democrats.
Some people are saying that this is an indication that the CPDM, and for that matter, President Paul Biya, is disinterested in resolving any problems that exist, despite urging by Cameroon partners as well as Cameroonians themselves to have those problems resolved so they can live in peace and in harmony. Your take?
Yeah, my take is that President Biya has the legitimacy and the legality to solve the problems of the nation. And he is doing so and has been doing so and will continue to do so. But the fact that he's doing so and has been doing so and will continue to do so does not stop the nation, the republic, from moving forward in ensuring that democracy reigns and that people exercise their freedom. One does not preclude the other. The elections will continue to take place as they do in all democracies, but then those who are charged with the responsibility of taking decisions at the executive level, at the legislative level, or at the judiciary level will continue to do their job as mandated by them under the Constitution. The fact that they're doing their job does not mean that they should stop elections first, no. Elections cannot stop because elections are a continuing test to demonstrate that democracy reigns and that freedom reigns. So these problems that we've got are not problems that started today. And those problems will not stop. Even tomorrow, there will still be problems.
What do you say to critics who say that the party, the CPDM, has failed to put pressure on the president to resolve problems in the country, to protect life and property, because there is problem in the English-speaking areas and he has failed to ensure there's dialogue without preconditions to resolve this problem despite in every attempt to urge him on to do so?
I can tell you what I know as a member of the CPDM party. The CPDM party has continually encouraged and supported the President of the Republic in his capacity as the national president of the party to move forward and move ahead with the agenda of dialogue. The CPDM is also for dialogue and has encouraged and supported the president in his dialogue agenda. And that dialogue has been going on, perhaps in an unstructured format. All I know is that the president is on record that he is interested and he is committed to that dialogue. Let us give him the chance to make that dialogue happen.
Dr. Elvis Ngolengole is the coordinator of the Academia for the Cameroonian ruling party, CPDM. He spoke with me from the capital, Yaoundé. The Kenyan government has started to fight against the conviction and fining of its three top officers regarding politician and lawyer Miguna Miguna's detention and deportation. In documents sworn by Solicitor General Kennedy Ogeto, the government protested against orders issued when Miguna returned to the country but was detained at the Jomo Kenyatta International Airport and later deported. Samuel Atandi is a Kenyan member of parliament and a member of the opposition NASA coalition. My colleague Douglas Mpuga reached him in the capital, Nairobi, for his reaction to what appears to be a test of the Kenyan judiciary.
The Miguna debacle is one of those things that have put our democracy and our institutions in complete test, because it has come out that we have not been able to slay the dragon of impunity, where our courts make decisions and institutions that are supposed to make respect these decisions are not doing so. So right now, there's some level of calmness because the institutions, the police, the minister in charge of internal security and immigration has tried to come out to put their case forward. But the worry is that, the team met the parliamentary committee in charge of internal security and they tried to put their case forward. We have doubted their submission because in the end they have only attempted to cut aspersions of the integrity of our judiciary. And as you know, our judiciary in this region is respected for being firm and for standing for the making fair judgments on cases. So we are facing a situation where our executive is appearing not to be respecting the decisions of the judiciary. So this is likely to cause chaos and to bring confusion in our governance.
It seems to many that the executive is not ready to respect court rulings. Where does this situation leave the independence of the judiciary in Kenya?
Yes, what's happening in Kenya is a case where when the presidential elections were annulled by the Supreme Court, the executive arm said that they would pay back, that they would revisit. So what is happening is that the executive appears to be trying to revisit, and they have attempted in many ways to try even to interfere with the composition of the Judicial Service Commission that is in charge of supervising the judiciary. So we are having a situation where the executive is appearing to be trying to get back to the judiciary because of the previous issues that they made, which is against the executive. So what happened on Tuesday when Dr. Matiang'i appeared before Parliament was basically a cleansing exercise. As members of the minority in Parliament, we have rightly said that the Parliament appears to have also been captured by the executive. So we have called upon our colleagues in the National Assembly to stand up for the rule of law, so that we do not have a case where Parliament is used to cleanse the executive.
What's the official position of the National Coalition on this issue?
The National Coalition, our president, condemned the submissions by Dr. Matiang'i. We felt that that was the highest expression of impunity and disregard for the other institutions. So our position is very clear that even though you are aware that our president and the president of the Republic of Kenya are currently in unity of purpose that is basically aimed at addressing some of the issues that have affected us over the years, such as tribalism, corruption, and divisive electoral processes, etc. We have insisted that the rule of law must be respected and that independent public institutions must be allowed to perform their duties and their mandate, and the decisions of the court must be respected. We have also said that we expect the Jubilee Coalition to understand that even though we are together in this area, that we are not going to stop at seeing things that are rolling back again. So our position is very clear. There must be respect for the rule of law. That is fundamental. And we must respect the institutions of governance.
Samuel Atandi is a Kenyan Member of Parliament and a member of the Opposition National Coalition. He spoke with me from Nairobi. The Zambian ruling party Patriotic Front says it will not be part of a dialogue organized by the Commonwealth. The party's Secretary General David Mwila said there are a lot of countries in Africa that require the attention of the Commonwealth, but not Zambia. This after an official of the party said the Southern African country is capable of using its internal structures to organize a dialogue among political parties and other stakeholders. The dialogue is aimed to help resolve political tension and other challenges the country faces. For more, I reach Sunday Chanda, media director for the ruling Patriotic Front Party.
That is a position that speaks to our sovereignty as a country. We have been independent over the past 54 years, and surely after 54 years of independence, we can find local solutions to local challenges, if any. And outsiders can come in and observe and possibly learn from us. The UPND has been chairing the Zambia Center for Interparty Dialogue for over 3 years. And now that there had been a leadership change and another political party is chairing the ZCID, Mr. Hakainde Hichilema and his UPND are saying that they do not have confidence in a body that they belong to.
Does the PF has anything against the Commonwealth, of which Zambia is a prominent member?
I mean, one thing that is very clear on the table is that Zambia is not a colony of the Commonwealth, and we remain a member of the Commonwealth, and we appreciate, you know, as and when they would want to get involved in what is happening locally. But what is very important to state is that the Commonwealth can come in, but they can come in as observers. We want a locally driven, home-driven dialogue process, ZCID, the church, and for all political parties to get involved.
Has the Patriotic Front proposed any unbiased or impartial mediator to organize this dialogue that will be acceptable to all political parties and stakeholders concerned in order to ensure a smooth running dialogue to resolve any possible disagreement that could create challenges in presently and in the future.
Now, what we're saying is that we have the Zambia Center for Interparty Dialogue. And when you speak to the UPND, they will tell you that what they think are the contentious issues that they would want to bring to the table or to be discussed are the constitutional amendments and electoral reforms. Those two remain pronounced. I can tell you, Peter, that the Ministry of Justice and other stakeholders have been and they've commenced constitutional amendments, and whilst everybody else has made proposals and contributions to the proposed amendments to the Constitution and to the electoral reforms, the UPND has made no single proposal, not to the constitutional amendments, not to the electoral reforms. That is the more reason why we're saying that when they talk about dialogue, in their language, it means politics. Can you believe that today the UPND leader has accused the United Nations resident representative of having helped the PF to rig the 2016 election? Unbelievable. Outrageous. So you know, and this is a man who says he wants dialogue. He wants to politic.
So what is the end game here for the Patriotic Front Party about ensuring dialogue, talking to your political opponent, resolving any disagreement, and governing the country effectively to ensure that Zambians get what they want ahead of the 2021 general election?
For us, dialogue is an ongoing process beyond 2021. And for the Patriotic Front, we still remain committed to the dialogue that we've been involved with way before we formed government, to the time that we formed government, to 2021 and beyond 2021. That is part of our culture. And what we are saying is that we want to grow and consolidate our capacity as a country to be able to dialogue amongst ourselves. And we are not in a crisis, for Christ's sake. Zambia is not on fire, for Christ's sake. And the contentious issues that UPND will talk about are issues that are being addressed today by the responsible wings of government and stakeholders, and UPND has stayed away from those processes. So the end game for the Patriotic Front is that we are ready to sit on the table of brotherhood and dialogue with whichever political party there is. Whoever wants to come to the dialogue table, we are ready to engage them. And our only position is that the process must be locally driven. And anyone else can come in as an observer. And we are not asking for too much. 54 years after our independence, surely we cannot throw away our sovereignty over the window just for the purpose of appeasing Mr. Hakainde Hichilema and his cronies. That we are not going to do.
Sunday Chanda is the media director for the Zambian ruling Patriotic Front Party. He spoke with me from the capital, Lusaka. April 7 marks the 70th anniversary of the World Health Organization. It also marks World Health Day. Viewer Carol Pearson looks at what's been accomplished over the past 7 decades and what still needs to be done.
Over the past 70 years, the World Health Organization has spearheaded efforts to free the world of killer diseases like smallpox. It has also formed partnerships to end other diseases like polio. Peter Crowley, a former polio team leader at UNICEF, said we are nearing the end of that disease.
We're almost there, this close. 99.9% of polio has been eradicated from the world.
Crowley made the statement in 2014. Since then, polio workers have kept up their effort despite conflict and hardship. Last year, 17 children contracted the virus. But polio will only be stamped out when no child gets this disease. Access to other life-saving vaccines, like those against measles and a host of other viruses, is out of reach for many people. That's why the World Health Organization declared the theme for this World Health Day, Health for All. James Fitzgerald oversees the development of universal health coverage in the Americas at the Pan American Health Organization, a regional division of the World Health Organization.
Much of the world is talking about universal health coverage at the moment as one of the really global challenges that we have.
But barriers mean 2 out of 3 people in the Americas, as well as half the people in the world, don't have access to health care.
Essentially, the same barriers we see elsewhere. They're geographical, the lack of physical availability of healthcare institutions. They are what we call institutional, or relating to the organization of the health system, like waiting times, lack of doctors, nurses, etc. They are financial, where there's just not enough money being put into the system, or people have to pay out of pocket. And then there are issues relating to social discrimination within the health systems.
It's a tall order to get countries to invest in national health services. The WHO argues that when people have access to health care, people will live more productive lives, epidemics can be held at bay, and the countries where they live are more likely to prosper. Carol Pearson, VOA News.
You are listening to Nightline Africa on the English service of The Voice of America. I'm your host, Peter Clotte, in Washington, D.C. Coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, the Saturday music spot from our collection of music from the continent. But first, the Public Affairs Committee, a Malawian civil society group, is calling for electoral reforms. Felix Chingota says there's need for the country to change the way candidates are declared winners after elections are organized by the Malawian Electoral Commission. He says his group proposes that candidates should be able to garner at least 50% plus one vote in order to be declared winner of any polls. The proposal, he says, is part of an effort to ensure an equal playing field for all parties in the run-up to future elections. His remarks came after women groups called for special seats for women in the Malawian parliament. The Public Affairs Committee Chairman Felix Chingota told me his group's key aim is to ensure elections are transparent and credible.
The Malawi Law Society prepared draft bills, the aim of which was to reform our electoral system. There are about six of them. And then we as Public Affairs Committee were in support of the proposals made by the Malawi Law Commission. And there was a bill about the Malawi Electoral Commission having their own established funding. And there was a bill regarding reform of the Malawi Electoral Commission. But there was also a bill talking about how presidents, MPs, and councillors are elected. There were about six bills or so. And the Public Affairs Committee as a body, which is very keen on governance, but also a body that is very keen to see that there is a good measure of social cohesion in this country. We supported it. And we made sure that when the Malawi Parliament met last December, that these bills should be presented to Parliament.
As the chairman of the Public Affairs Committee, what is your organization willing to do, or how far is your organization willing to go to ensure that some of these reforms that you seek are implemented ahead of next year's general election?
I'm not very sure whether it will be possible for these electoral reforms to be passed in Parliament before next elections 2019. Because we get information from the Malawi Electoral Commission that the parliament which met in December last year was very key for the calendar preparation. And since most of the bills were not passed in parliament last December, it appears that the Malawi Electoral Commission will find it very difficult to incorporate any more suggestions before the 2019 elections.
So in the sensitization of Malawians about some of the things that you seek, how widespread has the acceptance been about this issue of ensuring electoral reforms in the near future?
Before the Malawi Law Commission drafted the six bills, they did a lot of consultation with a lot of people, traditional leaders, with most of the political parties and so on. So consultation was done very widely, and these reforms are actually, I would say, generally accepted by the citizenry in Malawi. And it is just unfortunate that our MPs, when they met last December, rejected the proposal from the Malawi Law Commission. But when the parliament rejected, most of the Malawians, I would say, we are very unhappy. They are still angry and very unhappy that our MPs turned down the proposals from Malawi Law Commission.
What are the prospects of your advocacy to ensure electoral reforms? What are the prospects now?
I think the prospects are very high. I can say it here that as Public Affairs Committee, we would like to have a government in place that will facilitate the passing of the rest of the electoral reform bills. And so come next year and the subsequent years, we will do the same lobbying which we did before December last year to make sure that the rest of the electoral bills are actually in Parliament and passed.
I understand there are some political parties and other stakeholders who are particularly not interested in some of these electoral reforms. How do you convince them?
I mean, there could be one or two. That's why I'm saying we shall do the same lobbying as we did last year, and contacting those parties who are yet unsure about the viability of the electoral reforms. And I'm sure eventually they'll come to our side, and not necessarily to our side, but they'll come to agree that reforming our electoral system is very important. So, for example, there was a bill regarding the Malawi Electoral Commission having its own protected funds, operational funds, so that whenever there is either by-elections and things like that, they don't have to go each time to go to Parliament, to the Treasury, to ask for funding. They will have funds readily available for any operation. And the thing that is important for the government, for democracy, put it across.
Felix Chingota is the chairman for the Malawian Public Affairs Committee. He spoke with me from the capital, Lilongwe. Spread of fake news into the news cycle across sub-Saharan Africa is causing widespread concern among news organizations and the general public. The U.S. State Department, through the Bureau of International Information Programs, is taking action with a media literacy awareness campaign targeting over 500,000 young people in Africa. For VOA, Ruben Chiama reports from the Kenyan capital, Nairobi.
The two-month-long campaign was launched on April the 2nd as the world marked International Fact-Checking Day. U.S. officials say the digital effort will target the public, including members of the Young African Leaders Initiative, or YALI, the network established by former President Barack Obama in 2013, is an effort to invest in the next generation of African leaders. Christine Nidler is the YALI network coordinator.
This campaign started online, Facebook, Twitter, and, you know, it's part of a year-long campaign for the embassy here in Kenya, is asking our network members to stop. When you see information, before you share it, stop. Reflect, think about what you're going to share, and verify to see if it's true. And on April 2nd, International Fact-Checking Day, the YALI Network campaign launched Africa-wide to more than 500,000 of our network members.
The campaign, titled hashtag YALI Checks, Stop, Reflect, Verify, is designed to sensitize the public and counter the spread of false news. It will provide a mix of online activities, including an email series, an online quiz, blog posts, online chats, public outreach, educational videos, and online pledges. According to media analysts, fake news is eroding confidence in the media. Caro Kimutai is the head of digital platforms at the Standard Group, one of Kenya's leading media houses.
So everything is a rumor until verified. Even if I see it on, you know, on a reporter's page and have to cross-check. Because, like I said, when I started, we're in the business of trust. And if trust is broken, we are in a very complex situation with our audience.
In recent months, content from non-credible news sources and sophisticated videos masquerading as legitimate newscasts have influenced people's socio-political opinions in different countries across Africa. Mark Kaigwa, the founder of a Nairobi-based digital tech research company, Nendo, explains.
WhatsApp, according to Nendo, has over 12 million users in the country. That makes it, even though it is an instant messaging application, it makes it the battleground for facts, for information, for breaking news. So for us, the one set of prescriptive tips, it depends on the actual platform where you consume and get your news from. And WhatsApp, just by sheer numbers, it is close to twice the size of Facebook. It is 12 times the size of Twitter. So it is a key section of the digital population.
The Kenyan Parliament is also taking action. It's considering a new law, the Computer and Cybercrimes Bill of 2017, that would outlaw the spread of false news. Some fear the government could use the law to stifle the flow of information, including criticism of human rights abuses and graft. Robin Jogu is a news editor with a local radio station in Nairobi. He supports legal efforts to control the problem, but acknowledges that passing effective legislation may be a case of trial and error.
The digital sphere is evolving too fast. So sometimes we pass that law and we know the processes that it takes to pass a new law. Before that, things will have really changed. In the process of coming up with new laws, the government will always try and come up with things that will compromise the media freedom.
But the Yali-driven campaign is urging young African leaders to stop, reflect, and verify before forwarding what could be fake news. Nidla is calling on more people to join the campaign.
Make that pledge. Take the pledge. It costs you nothing, but it's saying, hey, I want to be a part of stopping and identifying misinformation. So,
according to the campaign organizers, there have been a total of over 10,000 pledges to hashtag stop, reflect, verify before responsibly sharing the information. Ruben Chama, VOA News, Nairobi.
And right now it's time for music from our African collection.
She rocking now, rocking now, make my body wanting now. The way she break it down, make my body hungry now. The way she wind up, oh, oh, the way she break down, oh, oh, the way she wind up, oh, oh, I swear the way she break down, oh, oh, the way she wind up, oh, oh, I said the way she break down, oh, oh, the way she wind up, oh, oh, I swear the way she break down, oh, 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 oh. See me wonder where she ponder bless. Got me feeling irate. My way smoke way on the couch, and I'm feeling the way that she did move. Seeing the mood is right, and I'm ready to take you on. See, baby, roll on me. I know what done you. Me and you by outside, yeah. Tonight, tonight, I'm feeling it. I'm feeling it by your side. Said I'm feeling it. I'm feeling it. Rocking now, rocking now, make my body wanting now. The way she break it down, make my body hungry now, hungry now. The way she wind up, oh, oh, the way she break down, oh, oh, the way she wind up, oh, oh, I swear the way she break down, oh, oh, the way she wind up, oh, oh, I said the way she break down, oh, oh, the way she wind up, oh, oh, I swear the way she break down. She won't go, say, small girl with a big something, so she got the boy, me want something. No rhyme, no long shunting. Say we day down for that kind of thing. Say me a shoot harder than Van Damme, harder than Van Damme. Say me bust like a shotgun, I touch a girlfriend. Now she dig like a network. Say, girl, I want you to know. Say, your body's so fine and I know. Day for a holla, girl, you will. Say, you know balaba. Girl, you say, 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 I want to touch you all night. Girl, you they make me feel right. Techno me and rhyme just to smile. See, girl, you got what man, you got say. Rocking now, make my body wanting now, the way she break it down, make my body hungry now. We'll be right back.
Alichonifunza mama, na ndio maana amuishi kutukana. Amjui tunye, alichonifunza mama, na ndio maana amuishi kutukana. Amjui tunye, alichonifunza mama, na ndio maana amuishi kutukana. Amjui tunye, alichonifunza mama.
Testing my two,
my yeah. Check, my two.
High life in the dance hall.
Open my two, yeah, and double eye.
Open me my two, floating stone.
Open the mic, knee and take.
Open the mic,
out of a bench you any. Out of a bus, mommy. Baby, we be dancing in your dance hall. Baby, I'm not done with this. This ain't time for cocotie. I'm gonna give you that thing that you want. Baby, when you turn from me, oh, that thing there too hot for me. Girl, I wanna post you all over my wall. You said, what is your name again? Cause I'm feeling your game. This one getting up is smart. So be ready if you take me far.
Nice whining, girl.
We wanna go long. This girl I wine from the fat back, bringing it on, bringing it on. Girl, you fi jerk it up, jerk it up, jerk it up. The way you rock it and wind it, turn it on, turn it on. Girl, you fi know you're the boss of my world. I endorse you, baby. You've been verified.
I choose none other girl like you. Shorty with the body of a goddess, my boo. Hey, and the bitch, you chain glue. Yeah, the bitch, too, from this shoe. Yeah, when we carry them goose, won't feed them man like boo. Yeah, make you taste my ginger woman. Something to come out your fever, come on. In the night when it's cold, I go be cardigan. When it's sun, you go see, say, floating the man. Hey, at the end of the day, you my one only baby. The him, I will be fear you. They make me elevate. Open, I will give me taste in your face. You be great, baby, baby. Make you lay in my place. Shall it go on in the days when we run while our babes. Now we grown and we age and the form in the shape. Bigger than I'm a year. You be less celebrate. Flow can't shit the bust on my brain like hey.
That was music from the continent. We hope you enjoyed it. Nightline Africa comes to you on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC from the English service of The Voice of America. And from the rest of the Nightline team, managing editor Shaka Saleh, reporter Douglas Mpuga, producer Saida Hamdoun, and engineer for today, Justin Thwaite, we say a big thank you for joining us tonight. And remember, as the elders say, death is unable to speak of the ancestor. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in Washington. Good evening, Africa.
An editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
In an effort to limit resources that fuel the civil war in South Sudan, the United States Department of Commerce has imposed licensing requirements on 15 of the country's oil-linked entities whose revenues have contributed to the ongoing crisis in South Sudan. This means that all exports, re-exports, and transfers to these entities of any items originating in the United States will now require an export license. According to the World Bank, with oil revenue accounting for almost all of its exports and around 60% of its gross domestic product, South Sudan is the world's most oil-dependent country. Through this action, the United States hopes to increase pressure to end the country's five-year-old civil war and the resulting humanitarian crisis. In December 2013, less than 18 months after it declared its independence from Sudan, a power struggle between President Salva Kiir and Vice President Riek Machar spiraled into civil war. The continued fighting has cost the lives of tens of thousands of people and led to a devastated economy, human rights abuses, hunger, and malnutrition. One-third of the population has been displaced by the violence, nearly 2 million internally and more than 2 million who have fled to neighboring countries. The 15 entities include South Sudan's Ministries of Mining and Petroleum and state oil firm Nile Petroleum. Also included are Dar Petroleum Operating Company, oil distributor Nayakek and Sons, Greater Pioneer Operating Company, Juba Petrotech Technical Services, and Sud Petroleum Operating Company. The listed entities are a source of substantial revenue for the government of South Sudan, said State Department spokesperson Heather Nauert. Unfortunately, the South Sudanese government and corrupt official actors use this revenue to purchase weapons and fund irregular militias that undermine the peace, security, and stability of South Sudan, rather than support the welfare and current emergency food needs of the South Sudanese people. The government of South Sudan can do better, said Heather Nauert. As the largest donor of aid to South Sudan, the United States is proud to uphold humanitarian values and deliver vital assistance. The government of South Sudan must not squander that generosity and should take concrete steps to provide for the vast needs of the South Sudanese people.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.